This episode is brought to you by Wellness Resources, a family-owned and operated nutritional supplement company providing the highest quality clinically formulated supplements since 1985. Find out why they are not only one of my top choices for supplements, but also the top choice of health-conscious individuals around the world. Make sure you check them out at myvitaminresource.com. And don't forget to take advantage of their monthly specials. And on top of that, if you enter the promo code COUNTERPARTS, you will get free shipping on your order. So if you want to know what supplements I use and recommend, check out Wellness Resources at myvitaminresource.com.
This program is for informational purposes only. It is not intended to treat, diagnose, or cure any illness. Please speak with your doctor when starting a new health program.
Welcome one and all to the Wellness Talk podcast this week. Of course, I am George Batista, your host and your wellness advocate. Wellness Talk is a show that goes over the latest in health, healing, nutrition, fitness, everything we can do to give you all the tools to hopefully live a longer and healthier life. I've got a jam-packed show for you this week, so I'm going to just jump right into it. So first, we're going to go over from medical news today, deep sleep brain waves are linked to blood sugar control. So we're going to be talking a lot about blood sugar today and diabetes. So did you know that new science has come out on deep sleep and it actually can help you control your blood sugar? So this is good information. We're going to talk about why it's so important to get that deep sleep as part of your health toolkit. We've talked about sleep on this show ad nauseum. So you guys who have listened to the show before, you know how I feel about sleep, but it's one of my five keys to health. But now we can throw something on top of it, exactly how it affects blood sugar. So we'll go over that. Then fewer meals may prevent type 2 diabetes. So, and I've been telling you guys this for many, many years, and they're finally catching up with me, okay? Especially when I've gone back and forth with the folks that talk about having five or six meals a day to control blood sugar. And I said, no, it's actually fewer meals. Well, now University of Georgia has caught up with it. They're talking about having fewer meals and not snacking. So we're going to talk about exactly what they say in this study and why it's so important for you guys to really balance out the meals, to actually have fewer meals. And like I've talked about in the past, leaving space between the meals is so important if you want to control blood sugar, if you want to reduce your risk of type 2 diabetes, that type of thing. So we'll go over that. Then from there, drug-induced diabetes, are you at risk? This is from Wellness Resources. And we're going to talk about some of the drugs that you may be taking actually can lead to a higher risk of diabetes and actually can induce type 2 diabetes. So we're going to go over those. And you guys can see if whether you're on the drug or maybe you know somebody who's on it. It's a long list, so I may not go over the whole list, but I am going to highlight the important ones that can have a profound effect on your blood sugar because it's a lot more than you think. Then from there, and the main topic that we're going to talk about today is how to manage your A1C. So this is again from Wellness Resources. This is A1C Made Simple, your guide to keeping blood sugar in check. So again, talking a lot about blood sugar and diabetes because obviously it's a huge issue in society today. So we're going to talk about A1C. What exactly is the test? I get a lot of questions on this. People actually are confused regarding, the normal blood sugar test versus the A1C, the fasting blood glucose test and those types of things. So we'll go, deeply and, take a deep dive into exactly what the A1C is, what can affect it, and how you can, have a favorable outcome in your lifestyle in terms of the A1C. And then finally, we're going to talk about there's some drugs out there, specifically one specific one that a lot of people are taking for weight loss that is actually a diabetes drug. And this is a huge problem because for a couple of reasons. Number one, the side effects now are coming out. So we're going to dive into the side effects. And number two, a lot of people who are actually who really, really need this drug, who are actually diabetic, are having less and less access to this drug. Why? Because the people who are actually using this drug to, for weight loss are actually taking up a large majority of the stock. And this is a big problem. So, you know, again, if you're taking this drug, you better be careful. If you're taking drugs like this, you got to be careful because the side effects now are coming out. So we're going to talk about that. I'm actually going to play a quick clip of the latest news on some, you know, these types of drugs and why you should think twice if you are looking to control your weight or actually lose weight with a pill. Okay, so we're going to go over that. So it's a jam-packed show for you guys today. And of course, go to georgebatista.com to check out all the articles as well. For those of you who are new, that's the website. The articles are all there. You can read them for yourselves. And if you want to get these articles directly into your email box, make sure you sign up for the newsletter because it goes directly every week into your email box. You guys can just have those articles there instead of having to, you know, go to the website, but you can do either way, whichever is, you know, best for you. But also make sure you like, share, and subscribe because that's how we grow. That's how this show grows worldwide. The numbers are just phenomenal on this show every single week. Thank you so much for those of you who are helping us out, who enjoy the show, who like the show, and make sure you share it with your friends and family. Those of you who are donating as well, thank you so much for donating because obviously it goes right back into the show, helps us grow the show, make the show bigger. And, you know, that's what we want to do because, you know, at the end of the day, the show is for you guys, right? That's why I do the show and I bring this information to you every single day. So you're right at the top. You're right at the leading edge and the cutting edge of all the information that comes out. So I try to do my best to get you guys caught up with that. All right, guys, let's get started on our articles for the week. So first, from Medical News Today, deep sleep brain waves are linked to blood sugar control. So we'll go through the numbers really, really quick. So they talk about here, the National Institutes of Health suggests several lifestyle changes to help reduce your risk of developing type 2 diabetes. Okay, so they point out, obviously, you know, losing 5 to 7% of your body weight if a person is overweight and helping, obviously, keeping it off, getting at least 30 minutes of physical exercise 5 times a week and eating smaller portions and trying to eat healthy, obviously, at your meals. Those, you know, those are no-brainers. We talk about that all the time, okay? But what does sleep have to do with diabetes? This is what we're going to get into, okay? So there have been several studies in the past that have linked to, you know, have linked sleep apnea, sleep duration, you know, insomnia, all these types of things with raised blood glucose levels and increased risk for type 2 diabetes. So they've done studies on that. But this study was a little more specific, and it suggests that by activating the parasympathetic nervous system when you are asleep, especially with deep sleep, it increases the body's sensitivity to insulin, whereas it improves blood sugar control. So deep sleep brainwaves, this is good news, okay? For those of you, especially, obviously, you should be getting good sleep anyway. Okay. But they did two studies here. There was one on rats and one on people. Okay. And the one with the rats showed that within 10 minutes of clusters of sharp wave ripples from the hippocampus, which occurs in non-REM sleep, the rats showed a decrease in blood glucose concentrations. There was another study that showed that they first analyzed overnight polysomnography data and next morning glucose and insulin measurements of 647 people. They then repeated their experiments in another group of 1,996 people, okay? Now, in both groups, what they did was they controlled for many factors, including age, gender, race, body mass index, hypertension, quantity and quality of sleep. So they controlled for all those types of things. But what they found was that the coupling of deep sleep brain waves, specifically sleep spindle and slow waves, was associated with improved control of blood glucose the following morning. And what they say is here that they found that when deep sleep switched on this part of the nervous system, which is the parasympathetic nervous system. And again, we know that the parasympathetic nervous system is your rest, digest, and repair versus your sympathetic nervous system, which is the fight or flight. Okay. So the parasympathetic is the one that's really activated actually when you're going to sleep or when you're at deep rest. So they found that the deep sleep switched on this part of the nervous system, the body's sensitivity to insulin increased, prompting the absorption of glucose from the bloodstream into cells, therefore lowering blood glucose. And this is what you want. This is exactly what you want, right? You want the blood glucose to get out of the bloodstream and into where exactly where it needs to go, okay? Whether it's the musculoskeletal system, whether it's the liver, whether it's the brain, all the cells that need it, that's where it needs. Obviously, when you have too much glucose in the blood, this is a problem, right? And especially when you have insulin resistance, where blood glucose or insulin is not able to get into the cells, not able to transport the blood glucose into the cells in general, this is where you have a big problem. And a lot of this has to do with also when you're eating, especially at night, right? I talk about, you know, leaving space between your dinner, for example, and your sleep. So I say leave at least 3 hours of space. So let's say you eat your dinner at 7 o'clock and you eat it and you go to sleep at 10, leave that space. Why? Because number one, it helps your blood sugar go down to baseline. But number two, it helps with all the hormone secretions that are needed for blood sugar metabolism, for sleep, for regulation of body fat, for fat burning, all these types of things. Very, very important. We're going to get into a little bit of that later on. But very, very good promising information on this. Again, this is from Medical News Today. So this is why you should be getting good sleep. Make it a part of your lifestyle program to make sure that you're going to sleep at a good time and getting at least, I would say at least 6 hours, you know, ideally maybe 7 hours. 7 hours seems to be the sweet spot, but at least 6 hours every single night and doing whatever you can to do that. So very, very important. All right, next, out of University of Georgia, fewer meals may prevent type 2 diabetes. So now we're going to talk a little bit more about the meals and why the meals and the meal timing is important, okay? So the review found that a specific type of restricted eating may reduce the chances of developing type 2 diabetes and overall and your overall health. This is known as, they call it here, time-restricted eating. Some people call it intermittent fasting or a type of intermittent fasting, whatever you want to call it. But what they're saying here is eating fewer meals is going to have a big impact on your blood sugar, especially when you're cutting out the late snacks and also leaving the space between your dinner and your breakfast. Very important. So we'll talk about that. Now, they say here, and it's so true that we've been taught for many decades, is that we should be eating 3 meals a day plus snacking. And again, it's those folks that talk about 5 to 6 meals a day, 3 meals plus the snacks in between, which I never subscribe to. I think is one of the worst pieces of advice that you could give someone, especially if they're overweight, especially if they're dealing with any kind of diabetic issues or stuff like that. The only thing I would say for that is if a person is dealing with, you know, a dropping of blood sugar on a regular basis, you know, hypoglycemia, something like that, then that's a different story. But other than that, that's not the more common thing that's going on. Anyway, so the 3 meals and a snack style of eating prevents insulin levels from going down during the day, which I've talked about many times on this show. And with the amount of calories and sugars Americans consume on average, that can overload the body's insulin receptors, that leads to insulin resistance and often type 2 diabetes. Again, I've talked about it many times on this show, okay, and they're finally starting to catch up with it. Now, there are people that eat 2 meals a day. Okay, if that's fine, and if your body's good with that, and you kind of trained your body to do that, then that's fine. You can do that too. But at least, you know, 3 meals a day is kind of where I stand for my body. I burn pretty quickly anyway. I'm a thin guy. Okay, so, but what they say here that the researchers found that time-restricted eating allows the body to relax and lower insulin and glucose levels, which in turn can improve insulin resistance, brain health, and glycemic control. It can also reduce calorie intake by about 550 calories per day without the stress of calorie counting. So good information on this, you know, very, very important. Again, something I've been talking about for a long time. If you are a person that eats a lot more meals during the day, it's going to take a while for you to kind of cut back and to start seeing if you can get to at least 2 to 3 meals a day. But it is possible. Okay. It is possible. But again, you have to train your body. Remember what I've always said on this show. You train your body by how you eat on a regular, consistent basis. Okay. Your body has to adapt. The human body adapts to whatever you throw at it. Okay. So if you are eating a specific way, eventually your body will catch up to it and your body will start getting hungry at those specific times. So if you eat 6 meals a day, your body's going to be, you know, getting hungry at those specific times. If you start to cut back on it, it's going to be a little bit of a fight in the beginning, but you can eventually train your body and your body will adapt to less calories and you will start to see differences in it. Okay. But again, this is something that you have to do over time. You may want to work with a nutritionist or a dietitian or somebody, functional medicine doctor, that can help you through that if you can't do that by yourself. But it's something definitely to look into. But this is good out of the University of Georgia. Brand new information on this and something you should definitely think about. All right, next from Wellness Resources, drug-induced diabetes. Are you at risk? So we're going to go over the drugs or the pharmaceuticals, as they call it, that can increase your risk of type 2 diabetes. Okay, so I'm going to just quickly go through some of these. You guys can, you know, obviously read the article and see for yourself if, you know, whether you're on this medication and or if you know someone who's on this medication, maybe something you want to talk to them about. Obviously, if you're on any of these medications, you talk to your doctor. If you feel that it's, you know, that it could be a problem for you, if you could see that maybe diabetes or your insulin is starting to creep up and you think it could be from these medications, you talk to the doctor that put you on these medications and see if maybe you can, you know, they can work with you on reducing it or maybe changing it or whatever the case may be. Obviously, you got to, you know, everybody's different. So you got to, you know, be smart about it. Okay. So let's run through some of these really, really quick. Statin control lowering medications. That's the big one. That's probably number one. Glucocorticoids are big ones. Anti-retroviral therapy. Beta blockers, typically used in blood pressure control, thiazide diuretics also are beta 2 adrenergic antagonist, mTOR inhibitors, okay, immune checkpoint inhibitors, and new generation antipsychotics. So all these are just, you know, some of the medications that have been known to bring up your risk of type 2 diabetes. So if you are on any of these, you know, check them out. Make sure you read your labels. Make sure you look at the side effects because sometimes they know what the side effects are and it's listed and maybe your doctor hasn't told you this. But, you know, you got to do your homework, right? Obviously, you got to do your homework on this type of stuff. It's very, very important. I always suggest doing homework when a doctor puts you on a medication just so you're informed, right? Informed consent. You know that we haven't had much informed consent the last 3 years, but I always suggest you guys can do your part about informing yourselves on what these medications can do. Because remember, all these medications have some sort of side effects from small to big, and the side effects for one person may not be the side effects for somebody else's, right? Again, we're all different. We all come with a different biochemistry. We all come with a different background. We all come with different environmental factors, lifestyle factors. All that is, you have to take that into account. A lot of, you know, obviously a lot of doctors or mainstream medical that puts you on these medications, they don't factor those things in. So sometimes you got to be your own detective. Sometimes you got to, you know, do your research. And this is why I say ask questions. Ask about the side effects. Ask about, does this raise my risk of type 2 diabetes? Maybe you have diabetes in your family, right? Maybe you have issues with that in your family and you don't want that to be a risk factor for, you know, obviously if you're dealing with that. So these are things you have to make sure that you, again, talk to your doctor about because it can be an issue, okay? Now, there was a 2021 meta-analysis. The study that randomized control trials found that statin medications cause 9 to 33% higher risk of statin-induced new onset diabetes. But the American Heart Association's scientific statement in 2019, however, stated that the risk of new onset drug-induced diabetes is less than 0.2% per year of treatment. So, you know, either way, you still have to do your diligence on these medications. But think about children, because they're actually prescribing medications to kids as young as 6 years old. And you do not want to induce type 2 diabetes on a 6-year-old. Okay. So again, read your labels and really ask questions on this type of stuff. Okay. So now, what can you do to lower your risk? Okay. Obviously, even if you're on these medications, okay, you can do just simple things, right? Choose whole foods, eat good foods, unrefined 80 to 90% of the time, unprocessed foods. And I don't care what, by the way, just as a separate thing, I know a article recently came out that, you know, processed food could be healthy for you. I don't care what they say about it. Processed food is not healthy for you. So just, I'm not even going to, you know, really dive into that because it's so ridiculous. But just, you know, you guys, I know you guys who listen to this show know that, but, you know, we really have to be smarter than that. Okay. But anyway, so number one, obviously eat good food. Okay. Number two, drink, quality, good filtered water. Okay. Make sure you are drinking good water. And obviously, you know, also we're dealing with all these forever chemicals that may increase your risk of type 2 diabetes as well. So obviously all the stuff in the bottles and all that stuff, you know, that stuff can raise your increase your risk of type 2 diabetes as well. So just keep those things in mind. Number three, exercise. Again, what they talk about here, the best exercise is the one that you will do consistently. Now, obviously, the biggest one for diabetes control, blood sugar control, is using muscle. Okay. So when you're strength training, resistance training, using bands or push-ups or body weight or whatever you're doing, anything you can do to try to keep as much muscle as possible, that's going to help get glucose into the cells. That's going to help your body to use up the glucose that it's got, you know, floating around. So that's a good thing. But, you know, exercise is key. And number four, manage stress. And again, sleep. We talked about sleep in the previous article, because we know that lack of sleep can not only lead to risk of blood sugar problems, but cholesterol and other metabolic changes. So anyway, good article on this. Make sure you check this out. Again, it's at georgebatista.com. Read through it. See if, you know, you're on any of these medications, or maybe you know someone who's on these medications, but just do your diligence on these meds. Make sure you know what you're doing and what you're taking. All right, next, from Wellness Resources, we're going to do a deep dive into A1C. So this is A1C Made Simple, your guide to keeping blood sugar in check. Okay, so let's run through the numbers here. Currently in America, 88 million people, or 45% of all adults, have difficulties with slightly chronically increased blood sugar or prediabetes. By 2030, the number of people worldwide with prediabetes is expected to increase to more than 470 million. And if you think about it, you know, type 2 diabetes 50, 60 years ago was rare and unheard of, and now it's exploding. Right. So let's talk about hemoglobin A1C and exactly what it is, because, again, your doctors may have given you this test, or maybe you know someone who's had this test, and a lot of people get confused on it. So hemoglobin A1C is a little bit different than your normal fasting glucose test that they give you. OK, so think about it this way. When you eat sugar, for example, OK, so let's say you're eating some kind of glucose. OK, when sugar enters your bloodstream, it gets attached to what's called hemoglobin. Now, hemoglobin is a protein in your red blood cells. OK, now everyone has this happen, right? When you're eating some kind of glucose or sugar, OK, even if it's a small piece of fruit, whatever it is, you're going to get this attachment. There's going to be an attachment between your sugar and the hemoglobin. Okay. Now the difference being how much of this sugar is attached to your hemoglobin. This is where the issue is. Okay. People with higher levels of blood sugar attached to the hemoglobin, really, really higher levels. Okay. This is what the A1C test measures. It basically measures the percentage of your red blood cells that have sugar-coated hemoglobin. Okay. Now, it's not only the percentage, but it's also a weighted average of the blood sugar levels during the preceding 2 to 3 months. Okay. So that's what the hemoglobin, and just that's just basic terms, but that's the hemoglobin A1C test. It's an average over time, usually between the last 2 to 3 months. Okay. Now, this test is based on the life cycle of your red blood cells, and this test can be conducted while fasting or non-fasting. So this is why they may not necessarily ask you to fast when they're taking this test. I always like to fast if I'm taking a blood sugar test anyway. That's just the way I like to do it. But, you know, some doctors may not make it a big deal as far as fasting. Now, looking at the percentages, a healthy non-diabetic A1C level ranges from 4.0 to 5.6%. Now, diabetes is defined as hemoglobin A1C at 6.5% and higher, okay? Pre-diabetes is defined as an A1C level between 5.7% and 6.4%, okay? Now, obviously, individual factors are going to be determined by you. Obviously, everybody's factors are different, okay? So it is going to be different impacts to your A1C levels because you are an individual, okay? So, but just so you kind of see where the numbers are and when you're looking at blood tests and the standard blood tests and what your doctors are looking at, okay? Now, keep in mind that every time you have a meal or snack or beverage, okay, not including water, your blood sugar elevates and insulin is released. That's normal, okay? That's a normal part of how things work in your body, okay? And typically, depending on the size of your meal or what you've eaten or the glycemic index of that piece of food that you're eating or whatever, you know, it's going to be determined by when your blood sugar starts to come back down to baseline. Now, of course, if you have normal blood sugar levels, you don't have any problems with diabetes or, you know, blood sugar issues, your blood sugar is going to go down, you know, to normal pretty much 2 to 3 hours after you've eaten the meal. However, if your blood sugar levels are staying elevated over a long, period of time, this is where you start to see the problems. And again, A1C is pretty good at measuring this type of thing, okay? Because it's seeing a trend. It's basically measuring a trend over time, okay? Now, what are the non-dietary factors that impact A1C? Obviously, if you're pregnant, okay? If you've had blood transfusions, heavy blood loss, right? You know, menstrual cycle, those types of things, okay? Anemia, iron deficiency, vitamin B12 or folate deficiency, those can skew the numbers in A1C, okay? These are non-dietary factors, okay? So if you have any of those issues or if you're on some kind of medications, aspirin, opioids, treatments from steroids, those types of things, steroids specifically can really mess around with your blood sugar. If you're on steroids, let's say if you've got some kind of issues where you need to be on steroids or lowering inflammation, but they can really increase blood sugar levels. This way, doctors have to monitor blood sugar levels when somebody's on steroids and that type of thing. So just some things to keep in mind if you are dealing with, you know, medications and or any of those conditions when, you know, and you're taking an A1C test. Okay. Oh, by the way, if your spleen has been removed, this also can affect your A1C. Now, other things that can affect it, animal foods and cooking methods. Okay. So animal proteins, right? So basically when you're cooking animal proteins at a high temperature, for example, let's say you're grilling them. Okay. You're, you know, charcoal grilling them, broiling them, roasting them, searing them, pan frying, those types of things. That creates what's called AGES or advanced glycation end products. Okay. Advanced glycation end products basically can affect your blood sugar and or your hemoglobin A1C. Keep that in mind. Okay. So what are the factors that can support a healthy A1C? So obviously your diet quality and your diet quantity. And when I say quantity, meaning how much you're eating and how often you're eating. Huge. Okay. So obviously eating good food, of course, that's the big thing, right? Eating unprocessed food. But here's where I come in, because following the 5 rules of the leptin diet, in my view, is the most important thing. This is what I talk about. This is what I follow. This is what myself and my family follow. And this is what I've helped many people follow. What are the 5 rules of the leptin diet? Number 1, never eat after dinner. Number two, eat three meals a day. Do not snack. Number three, do not eat large meals. Number four, eat a breakfast containing protein. And number five, reduce the amount of calories or the amount of carbohydrate calories that you eat at each meal. And I'm not saying get rid of carbs. That's not what I'm saying. You need carbohydrates. Your body does need carbs. What I'm saying is reducing your carbs to a certain level. That's what I'm saying. So those are the five rules of the leptin diet. That is the diet that I follow. And that is the diet that I've helped many, many people with, helping them not only to get more energy from the food, to help them reduce their weight, bring their weight down, and to help them actually help unravel a lot of metabolic issues. Because we have a problem with metabolic inflexibility in our culture today, in society today, right? Obviously, because of the way we're eating. So the leptin diet is one way to unravel that and to get your body back to homeostasis, get your weight down, get your energy up, and get your body back to metabolic flexibility. So if you guys are interested and you want to know more about a leptin diet, I have a leptin diet weight loss course that you guys can, you know, that you guys can take. It's if you go to georgiabatista.com, go into the shop, and you'll see it, the leptin diet weight loss course. It's an audio course, and I did that purposely for you guys so you guys can take it with you at your driving to work, or you can put your headphones on and listen to it, do stuff around, you know, around the house and listen to it. And you can download it to your phone or to your computer, wherever you like, and you can listen to it. But I break it down step by step. I talk about the five rules, why each one is so important metabolically, why it's so important to make sure that you're eating in harmony with leptin and in harmony with all the other hormones that are secreted to make sure that your body is doing what it needs to do. So it's a specific way of doing things, but it's not a specific diet, meaning that you have to eat this and not eat that. It's just a way of eating and the timing of eating that's most important in this, okay? So if you guys are interested, check out the leptin diet weight loss course. Again, it's at georgiabatista.com. It's definitely worth your time, folks, if you want to check that out. So other things we can do besides, obviously, you know, good diet, exercise. Again, I've talked about it, aerobic and strength training exercise is extremely important in this whole business of making sure that diabetes or, you know, reducing your risk of it. Okay. Fructose intake. Okay. Studies demonstrate that individuals who consumed a low fructose diet improved their fasting glucose levels, improved their hemoglobin A1C, as well as triglycerides and other cardiovascular markers. Okay. Now, common sources of high fructose are obviously table sugar, honey, agave syrup, you know, maple flavored syrup, molasses, coconut sugar, soda pop juices, all those types of things. Now, I like honey, but I use raw unfiltered honey when I use it. But you guys, you know, you have to obviously gauge what's best for you. And then finally, dietary fiber, extremely, extremely important. You want to make sure that you're eating enough fiber. I say 30 to 40 grams of fiber, making sure that it's extremely important that you make sure you get enough fiber at your meals. Why? Because fiber will slow the rate of digestion and therefore lead to fewer and less blood sugar spikes, depending on what you're eating. Okay. So the more fiber you eat at your meal, especially if you have a meal that contains something with high sugar, the slower the rate of digestion, therefore you're not going to get that blood sugar spike. Very, very important. Okay. But it's also going to help you with regulation of A1C. Okay. So it's extremely important to slow down the insulin response when you're eating carbohydrates. So get as much fiber as you can. Obviously, the vegetables are going to do that. If you're not good with eating fiber, here's what you do. You go to your local health food store, you get yourself a little can or a little bottle of fiber. They have tasteless fiber. Okay. And you can put it in your smoothie. You can just sprinkle some on your breakfast cereal or on your oatmeal or whatever. Do that every single day and have that with the meal. Okay. Have that with the meal. Very, very important. So fiber. So the big things here, the big takeaways on this, okay, making sure that you're separating your meals, 3 meals a day, no snacking in between the meals, leave 5 to 6 hours between the meals. Eat your last meal, let's just say if you go to bed at 10 o'clock, eat your last meal at 7, okay, leave 3 hours till 10. Then don't eat again for at least 10 to 12 hours the next morning. Okay, let's just say you're sleeping 8 hours. You know, you get up, right, try to eat, try to leave another hour or so, if you can, to your breakfast. The longer you leave to your breakfast, the better it is. Remember that your body burns fat faster and better when you're getting to your the morning cycle, right? So when you're waking up, that's when your fat burning is the fastest and the best, okay? So leaving space, 3 meals a day, no snacks. These are all important concepts with this type of diet and this way of eating. If you do these things, you know, these simple concepts, obviously eating good food, you know, pretty much you're going to start to unravel a lot of things. And this is over time now. This is nothing crazy. This is not, you know, some kind of fad thing. This is just basic principles. Doing this over time, you're going to find yourself in a much better condition. And again, reduced, you know, hopefully reduced A1C levels, reduced blood sugar, reduced insulin, all these types of things back to baseline. Okay. So just some good tips on A1C and good tips on, you know, keeping your blood sugar in check in general. Simple concepts, but I think you guys really will get a lot out of it if you really stay to those concepts. And again, check out the Leptin Diet Weight Loss course if you guys are, you know, want to get really, really specific and dive into it, dive into the weeds on that. Very, very good stuff. All right, finally, there is this drug or this pharmaceutical that's all the rage now for weight loss. And we're going to talk a little bit about it. And but I want you to see this clip first, because there's some side effects that are coming out to this. But a lot of people are using this for weight loss. Now you're seeing celebrities talk about it. You're seeing, you know, lots of people, you know, a lot of these reality show people now talking about it. They're losing weight on these types of things. It is a diabetes drug. Just keep that in mind. It's a diabetes drug. Not that I am, you know, my feeling on these prescribed medications. However, there are people with type 2 diabetes that do need these drugs. And now a lot of people who are using this for weight loss, and it's becoming a fad diet, and it's just incredible what's going on. So I'm going to play a quick clip on this for you guys, just so you can kind of, you guys can get up to speed on what's going on. So check this out.
A popular drug may cause stomach paralysis. The diabetes drug Ozempic and its sister drug for weight loss, Wegovy, utilize the same medication, semaglutide. These work by mimicking a hormone that slows the passage of food through the stomach and helps people to feel fuller longer. If the stomach slows down too much, however, that can cause problems. Experts in treating gastroparesis say that they are hearing more stories like these. The FDA has not determined whether the medications were the cause or if it may have been caused by another issue.
So this is something you guys really have to be careful of, okay? Because I know, you know, I know in society, the easiest thing to do is to find a pill for weight loss, right? That's the easiest thing to do, because people don't want to do the work. People don't want to exercise. People don't want to eat right. People don't want to, you know, reduce stress. People don't want to do all the things that can help you with losing weight. People don't want to do that. They just don't, okay? So they would rather take a pill and watch the pounds melt off. Remember, folks, this is a pharmaceutical drug, and these things have side effects. And now we're seeing the side effects starting to come out. Ozempic, we're seeing that, right? Stomach paralysis. In the EU, there was a study on it that some of these semaglutide drugs are actually now leading to suicidal thoughts. So they're doing investigations on that. I'm pretty sure it's not going to stop there. I'm pretty sure you're going to start seeing other things come out on this, okay? So this is just the start of this, folks. Anytime you are messing with the stomach or the gastrointestinal system with these types of drugs, you are asking for trouble. That's just my two cents on it. You guys can do whatever you want, obviously. And this is just from a health guy. I'm not a doctor. I'm not a scientist. I'm just giving you some common sense strategies on this. Anytime you're messing with the stomach or the gastrointestinal tract, it can be a problem. Okay. So just a warning for you guys out there, just keep tabs on this type of stuff, especially if you're deciding if you want to use this type of drug for weight loss instead of, you know, doing what you need to do to take responsibility. Of course, I'm going to bring you the most updated concepts on this. I'm going to bring you the most updated information just so you guys are aware and just so you guys are in the know. I would rather you guys know this stuff before you head into this stuff, just so you guys, you know, keep track of it and are aware. And, you know, I think you'll be better for it. Okay. Just keep those things in mind. All right, guys, that's it for today. Thank you so much for joining me. I told you it was a lot of information. We got through it. Thank you so much for those of you that stuck around and those of you who follow us every single week. We'll be back next week with some great information. So make sure you stay, you know, you guys take care of yourselves, take care of each other, and make sure, don't forget, you guys always control your health. Have a great week.